Tape 1, Side 2, continued.
Several years ago, I received a letter from the Director General of Prisoner Rehabilitation from the State of Israel, saying that he had heard about the program for female offenders. Would I send him some material, because he wanted to open a hostel.
Have you ever been to Israel?
No, I have not. I hope to go in the next couple of years. I hope to go. And he wanted to start a hostel for female offenders and needed some help on that, and asked if I would write him and send him some material. With a name like Mrs. Arnold, I figured he had no way of knowing, and so I wrote him back a letter and said that I wanted him to know that I qualified under the law of return, and besides that, if my mother knew that there were female offenders in Israel, she would turn over in her grave, because nice Jewish girls didn't do those things. And he always says that it was love at first letter. And so we started to correspond, and told him all about the program, sent him everything. And lo and behold, last year he came to visit us. And that was a sort of a new marriage of me with the community, because of the Jewish community. Because when his name is Avraham Hoffman, and when Avraham told me that he was coming, he also told me that he observed Kashrus, and I was in trouble in the first place. The second place, with him coming here and all the stuff going on about Arabs, I was afraid to handle this on my own. What if there were news conference, and I thought I can just see me being responsible for the end of Israel or something, for something stupid that I would say. So I went to the United Jewish Federation, and my hookup there was wonderful. When I later found out that she's related to Florence Reisenstein, it gave me kind of a kick, and that is Jane Berkey. So Jane and I worked together, and they got me in touch with Rabbi Rosenfeld from the yeshiva, and he found me a Jewish family that Avraham stayed with. And they arranged all of the press things that happened while Avraham was here. And if you want any of those clippings, with Sandy not here, I can't give. I don't even know where she has them, but I could send that to you.
They would be very important for the records.
Okay, and I will send them to you. So Avraham was here and spoke and had press conferences and spoke to United Jewish Federation, big meeting that we had. And he then asked them to help him fund a sister program in Jerusalem for the program for female offenders. Those efforts continue, and you'll be interested to know that he asked the United Jewish Federation for $50,000, and they could not do that. But they are giving him the money to send two of his workers here. They will live at our center, our residential center in Oakland, and will be trained, and we'll provide them with room and board and what have you. And as a matter of fact, Jane is trying to put something together for me with Pinky Lebowitz to see if National Council can in any way help them in Israel with money.
Your residential center in Oakland.
Okay, I forgot to tell you about that, didn't I? Well, that's sort of newer. In 1982, when there was a great deal of, and I am skipping around because I'm not telling you anything about my personal life,
we'll
because I got
get
a whole
to,
other
worry.
Thing.
Yeah. Okay. We'll get to that.
But in the early 80s, suddenly there was a great deal of jail overcrowding across the whole nation as a result of mandatory sentencing, as a result of drugs. But for many reasons, a myriad of reasons, there's jail overcrowding. And the county was paying a great deal of attention to this jail overcrowding for men. And my staff came back and said to me, there's tremendous overcrowding in the women's section. So I went to a prison board meeting and reported to the commissioners that there was tremendous jail overcrowding for women, too, and that I wanted them to do something about this. Typical of Commissioner Forster, he said, well, why don't you do something about it, Charlotte? And I said, well, you know, he said, whatever you want to do, you tell me. So I proceeded to go around the country and look at residential facilities and came up with a plan for the commissioners to run a residential facility, not for us to run it, but to have the county run it. And they accepted it and said, you do it. And we had some false starts with property, and finally the county built our work release center that's across the street from Carlo College. That all relates back to my getting that President's Award, because they were very supportive of our bringing in a correctional facility across the street from Carlo. And they built the center and then said, you run it. And so they gave us a contract to run it. It was the first work release center built for women and in the country. So we have that as a model. The other thing that's happened to us besides national replication and statewide is that there is a male organization for male offenders called Renewal Inc. Renewal Incorporated, but they just call it Renewal Inc. And they were having problems getting started. I was asked to head a task force to find a work release center for men. And so we sort of brought Renewal Inc. to life. And then after they had management problems, they asked to become an affiliate of the Program for Female Offenders, too. So we now have a male affiliate organization. And they have two work release centers now, one in Homestead and one on 9th Street. So we have three work release centers that we manage in Pittsburgh and a work release center in Philadelphia on our model. And we hope in January to open a work release center in Allentown. I should tell you that, again, this is something I would never say to anybody except that it's you, is that our director in Allentown is the wife of the local rabbi. Isn't that funny? But it's just sort of strange that that would happen. I'm sure it had something to do with Judge Davison, though, being there and being priest. I didn't choose that person.
We get involved.
Yeah. So that's kind of what we're doing here. I was on a track, and I can't remember what track I was on. Oh, I think that maybe professionally one of the nicest things that happened to me in a way, and to the agency too, is that when the federal court ordered Allegheny County to develop a plan to meet with their overcrowding, instead of giving it to their planning department, instead of hiring one of the universities, they hired the Program for Female Offenders, and I did their county plan. I could get you a copy of that
if you'd be okay.
And I can get that. I think I know where that is. A copy of that plan. And so we did for them, and we're in the implementation stage. And if you look outside, we have the plan, the cover, and the table of contents enlarged and framed, because we did do their plan for that. And part of what is included in that is our, you know, work release and the kind of things that we do. And so we're continuing to work and to implement that.
Are you optimistic about its being good?
Oh, it's almost all implemented.
It is
the plan
implemented?
Is almost all implemented. As a matter of fact, I'm going to report on December 7th to the prison board that the entire plan is almost implemented, or where I am with each thing in the plan. So that's been kind of fun, too, that. And I call it my Israeli connection. I'm into that as often as I can, and they call me from Israel, which is kind of cute too.
You really should go.
Well, we are going to go. As a matter of fact, my husband and I have been to China and Hong Kong and never got to Israel. But, of course, my husband is not Jewish, and he does not feel this. My daughter says, leave him home and take me. But one of these days. And maybe next year, my son and daughter-in-law would like us to go with them. So we may go next year.
That would be fascinating.
Do you want me to do a little bit backtrack on my personal life?
Yeah, let's go back.
Okay.
When you lived in northern New York,
Middletown
State, at the foot of the Catskills.
Right.
Where did you go to school there?
Middletown High School, Middletown Schools, and Middletown High School, and then the State University of New York, Albany campus.
And any particular interests while you were in high school?
Or grade school?
Oh, well, always it was writing and the theater. And I was a national thespian, a National Honor Society, all that kind of thing. I lived through anti-Semitism as a youngster, being at the foothills of the Catskills. The Jewish, New York Jewish community went up to the Catskills, and there were no throughways, so they rode through town and created a lot of anti-Semitism, and that the kids who lived in town lived with. As a matter of fact, it's kind of interesting, and thank you for sort of reminding me, because this is kind of an interesting story. When I went into Middletown High School, there was a sorority system there, and I had a group of friends that I was very, very friendly with. There were 9 of us, and 8 of them were asked to join the High Y, but not me. And I can still remember my mother and I crying in the kitchen, because it was really, you know, it was moving to me now. And when I received that Y Award, I mentioned that. I thought they ought to know that.
Any particular significance?
It's funny how that can so...
I went through that, so I know. I know.
Well, any particular significance to teachers, community leaders, that in any way shaped or directed
what
you were doing.
Yes, and when you remind me, that's interesting. And it's interesting given the whole thing, because the teacher who probably influenced me the most was a male teacher, because, you know, in those days, of course, high school teachers were fantastic. I mean, you know, they were on the same level as college teachers today. And
they were
scholars. And it was a doctor named Dr. Rosenblum, isn't that interesting, a Jewish teacher who thought I could write very well. And I did go on to be an English major. And also, in those days, you know, my father and mother and my sister and brother both graduated from high school. And during the Depression, when my brother graduated from high school, and there was no chance, even though he was very, very bright, that he could go to college. I mean, there was no way at all. And so my mother and father never even considered that I would go to college. And it was really my guidance counselors that you don't see that ilk today, or you didn't, not even in my children's life. That the guidance counselor called my mother and said, Mrs. Skolnick, your daughter must go to college. I don't know that you can send her. I had always wanted to go to Barnard, but there was no money for that kind of thing. And they said, we will help her to fill out her applications and she can go to the State College in New York. My mother then took in a boarder in my room so that she could help me to go to school. So there were great relationships there with teachers that I never saw in my kids' lives, never saw in my kids' lives at all. But in those days, you know, if they had somebody that they wanted to push ahead, I think that they did.
What about the Jewish community?
Very small Jewish community.
Did you have synagogue, temple?
One. It's conservative. I belong here to Tree of Life, and that would be the most, very much like Tree of Life, you know, a conservative, but not, you know, bordering on sort of reform, I guess.
That was unusual in those days.
Yeah, yeah. And my mother and father, you know, went to a synagogue. I did not receive a Jewish education. They didn't think that that was important for girls.
But your brother did.
My brother did.
What about the cultural life in your city?
In my city? Well, you've got to remember that this is a little town that was 60 miles north of New York City. And for a dollar on Sunday, you could take an excursion train to New York City. And my mother had relatives in New York City. And so we would go down on the train and go there and visit them. And at least, we used to go to Philadelphia too sometimes to see my parents' families. But because we were there, for instance, our Girl Scout troop used to go in, or especially the senior troop, used to go in to watch radio shows on the air. They would get us tickets for Broadway plays. That was how I got in to see those kinds of things. and the New York World's Fair in 1939, because it was so close, we took an excursion train and went to the New York World's Fair. I mean, you know, so that really the cultural life was all tied in with being close to New York City. And then my sister was married and moved to New York City, and I spent several summers with her, helping her with her babies and being available, then having all that cultural thing. And my brother-in-law used to send me up to, it's funny when you think about what you would do in New York City today, but he used to send me up to Columbia University all the time to do research for him.
What did he do?
He has an advertising agency, a small advertising agency. And he would send me up to Columbia 10 o'clock at night. Can you imagine a kid doing that today? And so a lot of the culture, I think, that I received from in the little town was based mostly on being near New York City.
There was nothing central with your synagogue?
Not really. The Girl Scout troop was out of the synagogue. It was a Jewish Girl Scout troop. We had a Jewish Girl Scout troop, and I can remember the name of my Girl Scout leader. Her name was Mrs. Politz. Isn't that funny? Yeah, I can't remember somebody I met yesterday, but that I remember. And then I think what I really broadened out was in Albany. Albany at that time was a very small school. It was a high school teacher's school. It wasn't a normal school because they gave arts degrees, but it was mostly to train high school teachers. And because it was small, we did a lot of things. I wrote a lot of skits. We put on skits. I danced. We had song fests and competitions. And I was in Alpha Epsilon Phi, and I was the president. And again, that was at the time a Jewish sorority and a good Jewish sorority. Mm-hmm. My daughter, incidentally, was not invited to join AU. And became an SDT at Tulane University, but I told her she was a legacy, and I could have gotten her in, but she didn't care. So I was very active in sorority and very active there, and I think a lot of what I learned there was how I've led my life since, truly. And I was also a terrible snob, and I blackballed people, and I've spent the rest of my life trying to overcome the people that I may have hurt as a kid in college.
What was the basis of your bias?
Oh, I don't just didn't like somebody. You know, what are kids? Why don't kids? I mean, they were all Jewish, so it had nothing to do with anything else. But, you know, and you do hurt people. Kids hurt people. And I think I've always felt badly that I may have had somebody crying in a locker room because I didn't want them in sorority, you know, kind of thing. Of course, I did to them what somebody had done to me at the Y. And then you get over that and you try to help people. At least I've always done. You know, since then, I think I've always tried to help people.
Did you have a close relationship with other Jewish families in the community?
Oh, my mother and father did. My mother and father had very close relationships with other Jewish families. And everything that they were in was Jewish. There was no interdating. I mean, my father would have killed me if I'd brought home anybody but somebody Jewish. I mean, you know, it was incredible. There was no... And even when I went to college, I never dated anyone who wasn't Jewish. Never.
And you were friends and all. When you were growing up in high school, grades, were all Jewish?
No, the girls weren't. The girls, that's what I say. I had a lot of non-Jewish girlfriends because every neighborhood you lived in, you know, I had some experiences. I can remember one time when I was quite young, coming home with my report card, and I had a girlfriend whose name doesn't matter to you, except that I, again, like I say, I can remember these people from all those hundreds of years ago, and I met somebody yesterday, I can't remember their name, but her name was Jean Kellogg, and she had a very poor report card, and she came back and said to me, my mother is furious at me. She said to me, you don't let Jews have better report cards than you. It's funny how open they were in their anti-Semitism when we were children, isn't it?
It's part of their lives.
I mean, I couldn't believe it. And then that same family had a pool, and she said, gee, I'd love to invite you up, but my mother said Jews can't swim in our pool. And what do you do? At the same time, when my son, Danny, who's a pistol anyway, now that I think back on it, if I could have known what he would become in later life, I guess I should have realized it, although he always seemed like an introvert to me. But he came home with a bloody nose one time, and he was not a fighter. And I said, "What happened?" He said, "This kid called me Hanukkah." So I punched him, and he punched me back. And I went up to I was called up to the school, and I said to the principal of the school, "I would tell Danny to do it again, so don't tell me, because we have turned our cheek too often. And I think that Danny was absolutely right to punch this kid in the face, and I wish he would do it again." So the principal couldn't say very much when I said that. But my kids never really went through this at all.
Allardyce?
No. They lived in Forest Hills. They went to Churchill schools.
Were your parents involved politically in any way
in
the community?
No.
Nothing at all.
They were not educated people. Very smart. My mother is a sad story, because she is a woman who probably could have been anything, but she only had an eighth grade education. When she graduated from grade school, that was the end of her education, and went to work in a factory. And she was really bright. She was the head of, in Port Jervis, I don't remember this, but she was like the head of their ladies' auxiliary in the synagogue and that kind of stuff. She was a real leader and very bright, very strong lady, very strong lady.
And your father?
Well, my father was a marvelous person, and different kind of person. He used to come home. If I tell you that my sister and I had put on his tombstone, "You are my sunshine," because he used to come home from work every night, even when he was working hard and things were bad, and open the door and sing "You are my sunshine," all the verses as he walked in the door. He was really a marvelous person. And my mother's frustration was around the fact that he didn't have the kind of drive. Had she been the man in the family, we probably would have been the Trumps, because she was really, but in those days, the woman didn't take the lead.
He accepted it.
But he was marvelous, and I think any of my sense of humor, if I have one, it all comes from him, because he really was funny.
Did your community have any type of health services? Was there a Jewish Aid Society or something like that in your community?
I don't know. I really don't know that, because, of course, I haven't lived there since I was a kid. I left there when I went to college and never lived there again. So I really don't know that. I know that my mother and father belonged to a senior citizens group, a Jewish senior citizens group. There was a Hadassah chapter, no B'nai B'rith women, no Council of Jewish Women, to my knowledge. Now, whether there would be again later, but my mother was active in Hadassah, and my sister then also became active in Hadassah later.
Sisterhood and brotherhood to the shul.
Oh, yes, yeah, sure.
That's the most.
And some kind of a fraternal organization, a Jewish fraternal org. Now I can't think of the
Hevra.
Name.
No, we had a
something, but I can't think what the name was that my father belonged to. Sort of like the Jewish Knights of Columbus or something. I can't remember, but it was a national group. I can't think of the name of that group that he belonged to. I think I probably. My sister and brother rarely talk about their childhood. I talk about it a lot more than they do. And my mother and father never really talked about anti-Semitism very much. I should qualify that. They never talked about anti-Semitism in Middletown. Let me go back a little later after I tell this and tell about my father's experience with anti-Semitism in the old country, because I always wanted to write that book, but then they wrote Fiddler on the Roof, and I figured they covered everything I would say. But I can remember when I was still in Port Jervis, New York, years before moving, I was about 5 or 6 years old, walking down the street, and this lady stopped me on the street. Can you imagine this happening today? But in those days, she said to me, "Hi, little girl, where do you go to church?" And I said to her, "The First Presbyterian Church." I was no more than 5 years old, and I came home and I said to my mother, "This lady asked me where I went to church," and she said, "What did you say?" And I said, "I told her the First Presbyterian Church," and she roared. I can remember her laughing. She said, "That's okay, that's great, better, because why would she ask you that?" Who knows? My father's...
That's interesting.
My father is from this little town, Cherkass, always told stories about the pogroms.
Is that in location to Leningrad, Moscow, or something?
It's near Kiev.
Near Kiev.
You have no idea how that's spelled.
It's spelled funny that I saw it many years later in a book. I never knew, and it's T-C-H-E-R, Cher, and E-R like K or C-O-S, Cherkass, something like that. And
have you ever been to Russia?
No. Well, yes, I have. I've been to Leningrad, but just as part of a tour, and I didn't go back
museums.
There. Yeah. Yeah, the Hermitage. And incidentally, at the time, I brought back rocks and put them, stones, and put them on my mother's and father's grave because they never had any desire to go back to Russia. But he always told stories about the pogroms and how when the Russian soldiers would come to their town, that they would hide in the sewers. And he was always very conscious of smells all his life because he remembered the smell of hiding in the sewers until after the Russian soldiers left. He also told the story of going with a yoke and pails to the well in the middle of the city at Passover time, and the Gentiles had thrown bread in the well, and so he couldn't bring his mother home any water from the well. He remembers that he was the youngest child of seven, and they sent his brothers to America one at a time, and then they sent money back for each one of them. When he finally left with his mother and father, they walked from Cherkass to Bremerhaven, Germany, and with cookies that they sold along the way. And he told the story about twirling a handkerchief, and you would remember, do you remember our mothers used to put, like if you had a dime for lunch and they tie it in the end of your handkerchief? A young person wouldn't remember this. He was twirling his handkerchief, and it had a knot in it, no money, but had a knot in it. And some German person walked up, a man, and grabbed this handkerchief and said, when there was no money in it, he said to him, "You dirty Jew." In German. My father used to say this in German. I'm not really sure how you say that. And so he remembers that. He remembers going when they came here. My mother remembers almost nothing He remembered going. Okay, I don't know where I was.
Your mother remembered nothing.
No, I did, but my father did remember being treated.
Talked about going to school with his nine
right,
in kindergarten.
Right, and he was called a greenhorn and, another
What did your father do with this country?
Well, he did many things. He was a great baseball fan, which later on, if I have the time to tell you a little bit about my kids, you'll see how interesting
get back to you.
Okay. He was very interested. He loved baseball and used to go to all the baseball games with the Philadelphia Athletics games and paid a quarter and sat in the bleachers, and the ball players in those days used to talk to the kids. So he talked to Jimmy Fox and Ty Cobb and Babe Ruth and loved baseball. The year he died, the Mets won the World Series, and I figured it was because he had managed something from up there because he was a great baseball fan and talked to my one youngster constantly about baseball all the time. But he had worked in a munitions factory. He and my mother had a dry goods store at one point. They had two diners in the Port Jervis area. And the last job, well, then he had a produce business and did a lot of that in the camps in the Catskills. And then his final job, which he loved probably more than anything, was that he was a school crossing guard. And he loved that, and he loved children. And that was what he did.
Anything else about your father at this point?
No, that I can think of.
This is the end of side 2 of take 1. It will be continued on take 3.